right for those who care to join us. Let's open this meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you, and you should be able to unmute and introduce yourself if you'd like. Alrighty.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic.
Mike.
Virginia Beach. I'm just new to this meeting. Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi, everyone. Name's Dustin. I'm an alcoholic, new to the meeting in the area as well.
Welcome.
Welcome, Dustin.
Righty. David, would you like to read the AA preamble for us? We'll throw that up on the screen.
Love to. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety.
Thank you. Thank you for reading. Alrighty. Format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we will be discussing step 12, part 2. If everybody would like to help me welcome our panel, we have Ian and Danielle tonight. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read a little bit, a paragraph or two, and each of our panel is going to share for a few minutes or so on each of the readings. And I believe Danielle has been the first person to go for tonight. I will go ahead and share that reading up. And then we'll let them take it away. Everybody can see that? Just get a thumbs up. Perfect. All right. This is going to be on page 96. Suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. And then on page 98, it is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. Right, Danielle, you want to take it away?
Hey, everyone. It's great to be back here. I had so much fun last time, and I can imagine I'm not going to have fun tonight. I'm Danielle, I'm an alcoholic, and I guess by this part, right, we're doing the deal, we're doing the work, like the real work is carrying this message to other people, to other alcoholics, right? And I didn't realize that for a long time because, you know, you come in and you're like, oh, this is so hard, step one through 11. But the truth is this is what I get to do. Having had a spiritual awakening or experience, whichever it is, I get to carry my experience, strength, and hope to other alcoholics. And there are very specific guidelines, right, that the first 100 came up with. Now, these people did not have a lot of sobriety time. These people were learning as they went. It was 100 people, and they were taking everything they knew and they were trying to put it pen to paper so that they could pass along their best practices in carrying this message, when it works best, how to do it, so that we could be most effective in carrying the message. So when it says we're making our second visit, so what happened on our first visit? You know, we got to go there, we got to share our story, our experience, qualify ourselves that we understand where they're at because we've been there before. That's one of the most important things about Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Is that I am you. I have been in that hole, and someone else has showed me the way out. And now I get to sit here and do the same thing for other people. And it's not a job. It is my duty. It is my responsibility. And it is a joy, right? It's not a chore. So on the second visit, right, he has read his volume and said he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery, right? So at this point, he's already been introduced to the book. He's already read the book, and having had an experience myself, which is a requirement if I am going to take somebody through this, having had a spiritual awakening, you can give him much practical advice, guidance or recommendations, suggestions, right? They don't have to follow anything that I say. I am not their superior. I am just another alcoholic that has been through this. I am not a god, and I make sure that my sponsees do not see me as one because I'm human just like them. We are shoulder to shoulder. The moment that I look down on someone else is the moment that my ego is controlling the whole boat, and I'm getting high off of thinking I have power over someone else, and that is not what I'm here for. I'm just here to share my experience and give guidance, recommendations. How did I do this? Let him know that you're available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. How many people get pissed when they go find one of their sponsees goes find someone else? Like, people take things personally, right? I go through the steps with all different people because not everybody has the same experience. So they can't pass along something they don't have. And this is about growing and understanding and effectiveness. This is really about seeing different perspectives so that I can better help all the different people out there. Now, I just try to use that as an advantage. Like, why continue to do the same thing over and over again with one person? There are so many people out there that I can learn from. So why not take advantage of that? But if somebody wants to go work with someone else, it's my job to encourage them, not to get mad, not to take it personally. It has nothing to do with me, right? As long as someone is seeking sobriety, seeking God, that's all that matters. And even leaving that door open, right? So that they know that if anything happens, they can always come back. There's no reason for animosity. So it is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. And that's what I said. I came into this program, I had an experience, and I went to meetings, and I bombed meetings. I threw my big book bomb into the middle of a group and I just let it explode and just hit everybody's head on the way down. And I wasn't using it as a tool. It was a weapon. And that didn't work. you know, then I become the big book thumper, you know, trying to push my way around, trying to force my way is the right way, your way is the wrong way. And once again, that's just creating more separation. When the whole point of this is to create unity. I mean, that's one of the foundations of the triangle that we're trying to live by, is this unity. So I actually, the more that I do this stuff, the more that I practice it, the more that I sponsor, the more that I carry this message, I get better at doing it and I learn what works. And this stuff written down here is definitely helpful if I'm willing to read it and actually take it into consideration. Because a lot of people, like, you know, I was taught at first to do it this way, and that's the way I did it. But it is really valuable. So that's what growing and understanding and effectiveness is. That often makes for the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. Why wouldn't they? My whole life, I've been brought up, I have been ingrained with this idea that I need my mom. I need her, right? I need my boyfriend. Well, guess what? You better believe I need my sponsor. You know, God is not tangible when I first start to develop this relationship. God is just an idea in my head. Now, this process is what allows me to build a relationship and start to have a more interactive relationship with my higher power. Now, it's my go-to to depend on people, though, because they're real, because I can feel them, because they're in front of me, because they care about me. But the problem is that it doesn't work. I also want to depend on myself. I want to think that I have the power to do this. That doesn't work either, right? And I can try this as many times as I want, right? Until I fail. And then I realize that I really have no choice but to depend on God. Now, in working with others, right, I can let people know I'm not on a pedestal. I'm just like you. Like I said, I'm just another alcoholic. Don't look to me for answers, and tell them what I did in order to develop this relationship that worked for me, and encourage them to go out and try it for themselves, right? So then it says, he clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of our dependence upon God. It's the root of all addiction. You know, codependency, I want to rely on people. I mean, I was trained to. And the more that I substitute people or things like money or work or success and make that number one in my life, the more likely I'm going to lose it. Because it's not about, you know, people will say that anything you put before AA, you lose. It's about anything that I put before God, I'll lose. I will lose my relationships. I will lose my family. I will lose my son. I will lose my job. These are all outside things, right? My relationship with God comes first, and I seek inside, and then everything else falls into place. But if I start seeking outside of myself for temporary relief, that's when I get into trouble and I end up flat on my face. So I need to burn the idea into the consciousness of every man, woman, that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. And that's what we get to learn how to do through this process, is go deep down within, find God within our hearts, and develop this relationship, which will change everything in our life. So thanks. Ian, you're up.
Thank you.
Wow. Not much for me to share. Thanks for letting me share. she's laughing because we talk about this stuff. So she's, you know, but I could probably poke a few things around in what she read and what was read, you know, because it's the first part of the reading is really important to me. And it's important to the extent that when somebody asks me, how do I know when I'm ready to sponsor someone? I take them right here and ask them, have they had the experience, you know, and what's the experience they had? Because people get afraid to sponsor people and they don't know what to do, you know, which is, so I'm going to come from this from the book point of view that, you know, it's telling me, okay, Danielle was pretty clear what happened on the first visit. Well, you know, back in the day when before this book was written, and if you look at the forward to the second edition, if you go into, you know, We Agnostics and, you know, we're in forward to the second edition when Bill met Bob, and then in the We Agnostics when they met Fitzmayo, and in A Vision for You when they met Bill Dotson, when Bill and Bob met Bill Dotson, AA number 3. If you look at how that worked for them at those days, the first visit, they came to tell them their stories. The second visit, they gave them a solution. And in Bill Dotson's case, in the third visit, he turned his life over to God and he walked out of the hospital a free man. They didn't have the availability of this book and stuff. They triaged very sick alcoholics and they just triaged them. And you'll see that throughout the whole book on the original stories before the book was written. So now they're trying to say, okay, how do we bottle what we just did and put this in some, you know, some form and ship it out to all these people? So they're giving clear-cut directions on how to help somebody here. So they, you know, they on the first visit, they lent them the book. You know, they lent them the book to read. And then if they didn't want it, they went and got it back. You know, but, and after he read the book, they asked some really important questions. And I still ask it now. And if you look, you know, like in Fred's story, they asked Fred if he considered himself and admitted he was an alcoholic, if he was really licked. And they asked him if they're prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. It's a really powerful question to ask somebody. Are you prepared to go through the 12 steps? Not the 11 steps. A lot of people are prepared to go in the self-help part of this process, but are you prepared to help others, to transform from self-help to help others? It's the next page says it's the foundation stone of your recovery. It's the heart of this whole process, the shift from self-help to help others. And if they are, and you've had, I've had this experience, Danielle said, you can offer much practical advice, but I'm going to shift the sheet. And I like the way Danielle put it from a current day perspective, you know, because it happens a lot. You have somebody, they want to start working with someone else. But in the book, it was clear. You know, when he wants to make a decision, his third step, it tells us clearly on page 63 exactly what to do. The wording's optional as long as we're ready to abandon ourselves utterly to God. And then it says we think carefully about who to take this step with, spiritual advisor or wife. So we're here to guide them to the third step and let them decide who they want to take that decision with. And then the book gives the directions what to do after you take the third step and launch into the fourth. They explain how to do it. You know, they just gave it to them. They didn't have fourth step workshops and stuff. But then it also comes right back on, I think, like 74, maybe. It says that, you know, we're to think carefully about who's to hear our whole story. And when we're ready to disclose that with someone, we do it immediately. So we're here to guide them to this place, to a third step decision and hear their fifth step. And then if they want to do it with someone else, they can, and it's all good. It doesn't really matter. And so this is a good spot to take people to when you're first introducing the book to them and ask them if they're willing to go through the 12 steps of recovery? That's the program, you know, and there's certain stuff like I don't like to really bash stuff, well-intentioned people, but you know, I kind of like, I know people mean well, but we're not in the program, right? The program is a 12-step. We're in a fellowship that's supposed to be foundationed by the 12-step program. You know, like I'm not in a program. I'm in a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my job is to offer the 12-step program to other people. And then what Danielle flipped over in the reading on 98, see, the matter of giving, you know, we're going to learn in the family afterwards that that's going to become a guiding principle. You know, we're going to learn how giving becomes a guiding principle in here. And that's really the difference of failure or success. If I understand what I'm giving, first of all, the only thing I'm giving is a path to God. I'm giving them an opportunity to get a relationship. And I like to stress that to people once they're in this, and especially people that have been through the 12-step process and they come and they're looking for a new experience. And I usually always ask them what's wrong with the one they had. But I'll bring them to page 45 and explain to them that here's my job right here. It's listed right on 45. It's exactly what the book's about, to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. I am not the problem solver. Danielle said it. Don't look at me to solve your problems. I'll guide you to the problem solver, but I won't be there to fix you. I've made a wholehearted commitment in the first step that I can't manage my life. I can't manage yours either. I can only give you my experience on how I passed through this. So, and then it says, when we put our work, again, what's our work? You know, that's another term that gets thrown around loosely in Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you really read around the book, it tells us that the work is carrying the message. I do the steps to prepare myself to produce the work. Like when I'm working with somebody, that means I'm taking them through the 12 steps. I'm not going through it. That's the preparation for the work. And it says strength all through this book. It tells you if you want to perfect and enlarge your spiritual life, it's through strenuous work and self-sacrifice for others. It's not about going through the steps. I can't get any closer to God going through the steps. I can go through the steps to get rid of the stuff that separates me and my self-will from having the access to the power. So, and what ends up happening is when I put my 12-step work with you on a service plane, you're relying on me. See, when that happens, There's a fine line I draw when I'm taking someone through the 12 steps. And if I want this more than they do, I very simply have a conversation with them and say, the minute I'm a 50-50 guy in this, but the minute I want this more than you do, it's time for our relationship to sit down and discuss it or take a different direction. Because I can't do this for them. I used to want to so bad. I used to want to give them what I had and take it out of me and give it to you because I watched them suffer, but I can't. They have to want it and they have to be willing to do it. And if they rely on me to do it for them, it's never going to work. And Danielle put it as good as you can possibly say. Another, like right off these readings, like three things I see well-intentioned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The third one is whatever you put in front of AA, you'll lose. Well, that's not true. And she said it because AA, this book, my sponsor, are all philosophical parts of life. They're all human aid. And it's really clear that no human aid can relieve me of my alcoholism. Only God can and will. So she said it, and I wholeheartedly agree with it. It's whatever I put in front of my relationship with God, I will lose. And they give you all kinds of stuff here, but the truth is they didn't have what we have today. But if, you know, and I say this from a perspective of a little bit of time, if you're brand new, you put everything you can in, go to as many meetings, do whatever you can to stay in the grace of God till you get guided through this process. But if you've been through this process and you've had a 12-step experience, it should be natural to you that. And then should burn the idea into every man and woman, I'll go with that, that they can get well, right? This isn't just about feeling better. It's about getting better. This process, you can feel better by a lot of things. It's about getting better here. And then, you know, it says, you know, they want to know, people ask me, I think Danielle once asked me this question too. You know, it says, trust God, clean house. Well, where's the third part, help others? But back then, what happened was, these were an Oxford group principle, to trust God and clean house. And then you witness the results. Ebby went out and witnessed Bill. Roland Hazard went out and witnessed Ebby. Bill went out and witnessed Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob and Bill went out and witnessed Bill Dodson. So the thing was for them to trust in God. And it says to be believe in and guidance of God and clean house, to take away anything that would get in the way of that and repair the wreckage that I caused, and then go out and witness it. And then I'll turn it back over for the next readings.
Thank you both so much. All right, the next reading is going to be on page 98. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many aspects, he should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can then be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. All right, Danielle.
All right. The domestic problem. There is absolutely no way that if you are an alcoholic like me, that you don't have domestic problems. I mean, I was a tornado roaring through my house, my family, my friends, everybody around me, my son. I mean, it was like, and the thing is just like a tornado, right? Some of it, like when you come up from a tornado cellar, right? After tornadoes come, what does it look like? Well, there are some things that are repairable and there are some things that aren't, right? And I can't just come out of that cellar and be like, you know, hey, mom, what's the matter here? You know, it's absolutely insane. But I really believe that I'm not drinking. So like they should be happy. The reality is that it's a journey. It's a journey coming to terms and getting healthy as a family, It's not just me, you know, the family is sick and I have to acknowledge that. And just because I start to get better doesn't mean that they do. Right. And as we read this, right, there may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. I mean, I've had all of them. I've had horrible divorces. I do not have a relationship with my family right now. And it's really unfortunate, but that's where I'm supposed to be today. It's there's no resentment around that. When your prospect has made such reparations as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living. Oh, let me tell you about how spiritual I am. Mom, I love God. I'm going to go to church. I'm going to do this. I'm going to pray, blah, blah. She's like, give me a break, Danielle. Like, you know, I can tell you anything, but I've been lying to these people for the majority of my life. I am not here to tell you what I'm doing. I need to demonstrate it. That's my job as a recovered alcoholic at this point, right? I have to change. The whole idea, right, of having had a spiritual experience, right, is that I change. I'm not the same person anymore. But part of the problem with that is I get sober, I go through these steps, I have an experience, and I don't know who the hell I am. And that's what happened to me. And it was, I ended up being just as in spiritual ego, telling everybody how spiritual I was, right? And how much I had God and I got this, that, you know, I wasn't shoulder to shoulder with anyone. I was talking down to everyone, using the big book as a weapon instead of a tool. And that's not what God wants for me. We are all God's children, whether we are sick or whether we are well, whether we are in the solution or whether we are not, whether we're going to big book meetings or whether we are going to 12 and 12 meetings. God loves us all, right? And I have to remember that. And the biggest principle, the hardest principle sometimes that I have to practice is love and tolerance. We learn about that in the 10th step. Love and tolerance is our code, right? So how many times did I start the ball rolling? Did I pick fights? Did I show up drunk? Did I ruin family vacations, right? And then I come around now and say, oh, I'm good, and expect people to just forgive me? No, it's a journey. It takes time. And it takes practicing, demonstrating these principles, not just talking about them, you know? And there were times, right, where my mother, I was on vacation and she walked in on me and I was on my knees praying. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? But the truth is that, like, she saw me do this. She saw me do what I say and say what I do. And she saw me change, right? That doesn't mean that she's going to invest time in getting well too, because it's hard to get well. It's hard to look at ourselves. That's what I ran from my whole life. I ran because I couldn't deal with me. And it was easier to drink. It was easier to use. It was easier to find outside stuff to just numb me. Right. So now I get to go back into my home and just start, just make a beginning, just demonstrate change, right? And you know what? They weren't very easygoing about it at first, but with time, things got better. You know, it says, even though the family may be at fault, they should not be concerned about that. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Stop looking at them and focus on me. This isn't about them. I can't change them. I can't fix them and I can't control them, right? This is their journey. They have their own higher power. And this goes for my son too. And these are words, and they are hard. It is hard to do this. But when I do it and when I bring the focus back to me and remember that I'm the one that can change. I am the one that I can turn to God in these moments, these hard, difficult times when the family is strained, right? When my ex-husband isn't showing up to pick up my son and my son is upset. Like, I can turn to God in those moments and I can hold my son's hand and we can pray together. And I can demonstrate this stuff so that he can form his own relationship with a higher power, right? So we don't fault find. My whole life I'm pointing fingers. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. No, today I get to be an adult. I get to be responsible and I get to take responsibility for my actions. I don't always have to be right. And I'm not. I am not perfect. I am far from it. But today I don't have to hide from being wrong. Today I can just accept it, move on, and live the rest of my life and not feel guilt or shame because I made a mistake. Because my higher power doesn't want me to do that, right? My higher power knows I'm more useful when I am accepting of myself and I learn from my mistakes. And then I go out and use it to help others. That's the whole purpose of life. That's the design for living, right? So it is in many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. Well, that wasn't necessarily my case. But, you know, the truth is that every family is different. You know, and this is a family disease. And, you know, just because I had a good relationship, I didn't have a good relationship, you know, these things change. And if I just bring the focus back to me and stop trying to figure it out, God's got this. Let him be the director. Let him do his job. And I get to show up. I get to help his children, focus on me, and the rest of the stuff falls into place. And that's like, just, it's easy, right? Easier said than done, but I have to practice these spiritual disciplines. That's how I get better at it. You know, I can't just talk about it. I have to do it. And when I do it, it's like I'm moving muscles and I'm gaining strength every time I go back and keep turning to God in those times instead of trying to rely on myself and outside things. So thanks.
Thank you.
Wow, thanks. Okay. So in my book, I have a line here drawn across. I can kind of show this. If you see, let's see. Yeah. If you could see the under, after the paragraph that we read prior, the burn into the idea, trust God, clean house. And now the domestic problems. And I draw a line there because this is the shift from where the 12th step start shifting from working with others to the practicing the principles. Right here is going to be the introduction to the family afterward. And I beg people to read those chapters that follow this, to wives, the family after, to employers. You don't have to be married to benefit from two wives, and you don't have to have a family to benefit from the family after. If you sponsor, there's principles upon principles deep into those chapters. So what it's telling me here, as a sponsor or somebody giving this practical advice, that, well, the first thing I like to look at here is, like Danielle said, the domestic problem. Well, there's a reason way back in the first step when we looked at the unmanageability and used the bedevilments as a barometer to my spiritual condition. The first bedevilment of these bedevilments that they talk about is trouble in personal relationships. And now, you know, I know that Morgan's going to read something. Hopefully we get to it. But the truth, I like to just share this right here and right now, is the practicing these principles starts in the home. And one of the readings ahead, page 19, is a much more important demonstration. They're way back on page 19, they're already introducing that we're going to take these principles and bring them into our homes, occupations, and affairs. Not affairs, homes, occupations. Not affairs, not work first, but home. Home. And when you get into the family afterwards, there's a very important line there that says that a spiritual life that does not include his family obligations may not be so spiritual after all. If I'm around for a very short period of time and I've got to pound meetings and do whatever I have to, but if I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, and I've got a relationship with God, and I'm leaving my family every day to go to meetings, shame on me. Really, this process is about that. How do you demonstrate the principles if you just leave, right? So when it says he should proceed to put these, well, first it tells me that when your prospect has made the reparation, so that's assuming he's into the ninth step and starting to make amends or completing them, and is thoroughly explained. So as he's making amends to his family and the people closest to him, he's explaining the new principles that he's going to start living. And we need to put them in action at home first. And it says if he's lucky enough to have a home. And then it's, Danielle said it with the fault finding, but there's all through this book, it tells me that I have to have love and tolerance. I have to have respect for other people's shortcomings and opinions. I mean, I could quote line after line, but this isn't about what they did. This is about what I did. And this is about my spirit. This is about how I walk this path. So we're looking at a paragraph that's going to deal with the recovered alcoholic back into society. And then on page 99, where it's talking about, you know, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. You know, I have to stop, you know, I have to stop fighting. There's no room for any relationship. Danielle and I, with another couple, are going through the traditions from a relationship perspective and looking at how these principles in our lives guide the relationships. And if there's fault finding and argument in a relationship, that means one side of the relationship is taking a superior position to the other. One part of the relationship's playing God, and it's no longer a 50-50 relationship. And it's more of a resentful relationship. And it's very difficult to work that way. It's very hard to have a healthy relationship. You can have a relationship, but will it be healthy? And then it talks about, I love this line where it says, if persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. You know, what ends up happening, at least in my experience, is that the family doesn't get well together at the same time. It's a process, and it's in God's hands. And Daniel said it, sometimes it may never get better. But it's up to me as somebody who's experienced this process and who's developed a relationship with God to just keep having the patience, the love, the tolerance, and hope that we can find a common ground to meet upon. But if we can't, it's also up to me to take the necessary steps so that other people can move on with their life. And then it says little by little, they'll do it. And these can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. Again, that's our real goal. to be helpful and friendly amongst our family first. It's real easy for me to sit here and be helpful and friendly to you. But you know what? Come to my house and come to Danielle's house and go see what it looks like. Well, my house is her house, really. So or her house is my house, however you want to put it. But, you know, this stuff has to happen in your house because, you know, it's easy to be nice in a 12-step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and people think you're really good. But what do you look like at home and at work? How do you treat the people closest to you? You know, are you treating them the same way you're treating your people that you're trying to help in the rooms? You know, that, and that's always a really good barometer to see because if you really want to know how someone's recovery really is, ask the people closest to them. They'll tell you the truth. So I'll pass and let you keep reading.
Thank you both so much. All right. So what I'm going to do here is there's three readings left. We're not going to get to all three of them, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to group this 3 and 4 together. That way y'all could each take 5 on what's read. Both of these will be on page 100 for anybody following along. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There is something the matter with spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem. Yeah. I think that'll be it for tonight, y'all.
All right. So there's a lot here, but I know we're at the end of the meeting, so I'll keep it short and sweet, of course. Both you and the new man must walk day by day. You know, I know that liquor and drugs and everything, it's over. Like, there are no lurking reservations. Like, today I live my life day by day. Alcoholism today has nothing to do with alcohol for me. I'm recovered from that. But what I have to do is live these spiritual principles. I have to be the person God wants me to be. I need to uphold my third step decision, and I need to continue to grow my relationship with my higher power. Because the thing about alcoholism, right, is that it's cunning. If I stop living this program, if I stop developing this relationship with my higher power, you know, I'll be right back where I started, or I'll be miserable in sobriety. You know, that's where I go to, is like deep depressions, and it comes on really quickly. So it's easier to just do this. You know, I've ended up there far too many times. It's easier to just do this. The problem is, when I first came in, I didn't know how to. Right. And it took practice, and it took stumbling and falling and learning the hard way. But as I grow, right, day by day, I make spiritual progress. I continue to learn and grow in understanding and effectiveness. And if you persist, remarkable things will happen. We are in the miracles business. I mean, I just saw a miracle happen in my life last week. Like, this is not a fairy tale. This is the reality that I live in when I walk hand in hand with God. Like, all sorts of remarkable things happen. I end up going to three different people, right, that are all working on the same thing to heal me. And I have this experience where I literally feel like God is touching my head, right, as this chiropractor and holistic guy is healing me. I feel it. It's not a question of whether I'm going to be healed. I am being healed. It's a vision. God has planted this vision in my heart and I feel it. And that's what I get to witness, not only in my life, but in everyone's life around me. Things that I could not do before, I can do now because God enables me to do them. And then I get to watch it and I get to be awake and I get to live, like really live. Like, I mean, I didn't even know what that meant. I didn't even know who I was and I'm still learning, but that's okay. You know, it says that when we put ourselves in God's hands, we're better than anything I could have planned, right? And that's like, what a promise. Like, I don't know what I need. God gives me what I need, not what I want. And you know what? I just went through the steps. I had a horrible experience with PTSD and I'm shaking and it was horrible. And I was in a depression. I was chemically imbalanced. I didn't even know what to do. And the only thing I knew that I could do was just try to keep my eyes on God and that know that he was walking with me through this and that I would be okay. And that's what happened. And now I'm on the other side and I get to witness him day by day with me and I get to witness the miracles. And that's what it says, right? Follow the dictates of a higher power and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world. No matter what your present circumstances, I can be happy, joyous, and free regardless of what's going on the outside, regardless of whether I'm talking to my family or not talking to my family, regardless of whether my ex-husband is hurting my son, you know, by his actions and using and whatever else, I can be okay because I know that he's being taken care of by God too. Right. That's what trusting and relying on God is all about. I have to. I don't have a choice anymore. You know, and it's not always easy. But do I want to feel better and just run from this stuff? Or do I want to get better and live in truth, which is part of my conception of God? Right. And then the next paragraph's right. I mean, the fact that people throwing their liquor down the toilet, I get it at the beginning, that kind of makes, I shouldn't be at bars when I'm 5 days sober. That's ridiculous. But today, I mean, I don't even know if we have liquor. We have liquor in our place in Florida for sure. I don't think we do here, but like, that's what I mean. It's removed. It's over there. It's cast aside. And it's just a non-issue. I don't think about it. I don't obsess about it. That's what it is to be recovered, right? And it says an alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind, these conditions, right? There is something the matter with his spiritual status. So if I'm scared of going to a bar, I need to get with God in the 12 steps. Oh my God, I'm sounding more like Ian every day. But it's true. It's like, you know, that's the signal, right? If I'm thinking about liquor or if it's even coming up or something, I need to really look inside me. What's going on? Where am I at? Where am I at with God? Well, you know, and I need to ask for help because it really has nothing to do with drinking. It has to do with the malady, the spiritual malady deep down within, the uncomfortability, the hole in my soul that's driving all of it. And when that spiritual malady is overcome, then I can be okay. I can be happy. I can be complete all on my own. what, no matter what is happening outside of me. And that is the gift. That is where I want to stay, safe and protected. And that's where I get to stay, because this book teaches me how to live my life. I just need to do it. And it's a journey. And, you know, I only have 4 years sober, man. but you know what? Like, I pay attention, I learn, and I just try to give back and live day by day. So that's it. Thank you so much for inviting me back.
Thank you.
All right. Got a couple minutes here. And the first thing I just want to say, that's just, this paragraph is so powerful. It just sums everything up in really that at the end of our recovery portion of this book, it tells me that the great fact is that when I have a relationship with God, there's going to be countless events are going to happen for me and other people. And, you know, in a paraphrase nutshell. And that's the greatest thing, you know, any better than, see, there was a shift from selfish to selfless, you know, like where we see that the more we give, the more we get. And the more we're involved in this process and the deeper we grow with the relationship with God. And it talks about promise after promise, you know, follow the dictates of a higher power, you know. And you can, I hate doing this, but these pages just reflect everything that we've read from this whole book up to here. Fred talked about in more about alcoholism, that his old life wasn't a bad one, but he wouldn't go back even if he could to the best days he had, or still weren't as good as his worst days today. And I believe that, you know, the stuff that's come through in my life today and how, what I can do for other people today is just beyond me. And, you know, again, the last paragraph, and it's just real simple. And it's just not just a newcomer. If you've been around for a long time, an alcoholic mind just means to me that I have not been restored to sanity, that I'm suffering a condition conducive for my obsession to return. So, how do I know if I have an alcoholic mind? It's real simple. I go, and that's why we have a 10th and 11th step to monitor that stuff, to keep us spiritually fit and to check our spiritual status. Because if the spiritual malady does not get overcome, you know, that's a big thing we don't hear in a lot of 12-step meetings and a lot of recovery. They focus on the obsession, but the bottom line is, if the spiritual malady is not taken care of, you'll be fighting the obsession for the rest of your life, and you will have an alcoholic mind. So how do you want to, if you want to know, I'll just end with this. If you want to know what your spiritual condition looks like, you want a temperature gauge or a barometer, go to page 52, look at the paragraph from the bedevilments that Bill and the first 100 identified. There are plenty more, but they're talking about those bedevilments, and see where you sit in those. And if you're currently suffering from one or more of those at a very high level, it may be time to look at your spiritual status, your spiritual condition, because in that condition, how long can you stay until you produce a condition conducive for the obsession to return? And how long can you fight off that before you pick up and start the vicious cycle? Doctor's opinion says it great. They're restless, irritable, and discontent unless they can once again experience the ease and comfort which they see others taking with impunity. And when they succumb to the desire, they start the whole cycle all over again. So I want to thank you all for, and David for inviting us back, and it's really nice to do it with Danielle, and I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be alcoholic. I mean, thank you.
Thank you both so much. That was a lightning fast hour, and we are out of time. David is sharing the Seventh Tradition QR code. All right, Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Though it is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. A couple really quick announcements. Does anybody have any? All right, well, I will say that this home group, as of tonight, has gone through our rotation of the 12 steps, which means next week we will be having a speaker, formerly known as Supper and a Speaker, but we are, feel free to bring your own supper and sit here on Zoom, but normally when we are in person pre-COVID times, it was a nice little potluck thing. David, do you have the flyer you want to throw up really quick? I forgot to pull it up.
Keep talking, I'm trying.
Oh, sorry. Great event, and it's gonna be here next week, the 31st, same time, 7 p.m., same link. It's Scotty from Utica, New York. So yeah, just log into this like the normal meeting and it'll be a nice little special thing next week. All righty. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available here in the Zoom room after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, thank our panel again. That was awesome. We're a little late on time, so we're gonna skip that last reading. For those who would care to join, we can go ahead and close this out with the Lord's Prayer, and you should be able to unmute if you wanna join in. Our Father,
Hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
For thine is the kingdom, power, and glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Ah, man, that was fire. Straight.
Thank y'all
fire.
So much.
That was amazing.
Thanks so much.
Oh, that was awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Danielle. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks as always for having us. Really appreciate it.
Really a joy.
Thank you guys for coming back.
Always a pleasure.